Bowden had...
Let me interrupt you for just a minute, Nick. We're talking to Nick Whitehead of SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now. I just turned the tape over and I want the people to be aware of what's going on. We missed a little bit of what you were saying before on the tape, but yeah, you've been covering the Coalition of the Citizens Police Review Board, which meets again, I believe, next Monday at 5 o'clock. Is that correct? I think it's the second Monday.
Monday of the month.
So they should be meeting again in the City Council chambers for those who are interested in following the trials, travails, and tribulations of our own toy poodle pet review board, which actually is doing a little yipping. So, I mean, I'm glad when they at least send off a letter to the police chief saying, why are you not logging the complaints and what's going on here? Actually, they're asking him. But anyway, you were saying that Kay Bowden, who is the attorney, who is the chairperson of the Citizens Police Review Board, is having problems with Chief Belcher or taking a somewhat different attitude towards him, or... I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Yeah, she thought she had secured an agreement from him in a personal meeting with herself and other members of this board that he would reliably forward the complaints as they come into the police office, including telephone complaints.
Mm-hmm.
They had found that the telephone complaints were just disappearing since they were made in person to the police department. There's no record.
You got this from a personal call to Kay Bowden?
No.
This is your impression of talking to John Malka.
Right.
Who's also a Citizens Police Review Board member, or commissioner, actually.
Yeah, but he said he needs the information to come out.
Oh, definitely.
He must be pretty certain of what's going on.
Yeah.
Now, so Bowden and some others sat down with the chief and said, look, this is no good. We're not getting the complaints through. Whether they're written or phoned, we're not getting all of them. We're getting some of them. And what particularly upset her was that the police chief had settled one matter entirely. It was not a serious violent matter, but he'd settled it and finalized and signed off on a complaint, and that particular one had never come for review to the board, at least not the final report. They'd never been able to approve it. So he took this singular authority upon himself in that particular, whether he likes that particular police person and wanted to absolve them or not, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But she was annoyed with that, and
you know, I've been kind of derelict in my own duty. I was going to file a complaint concerning a very minor incident that's kind of escalated, involving a simple ticket for a light on the back of my car, which I described on the radio at one point, and I haven't done it. And also, of course, a complaint against the two police officers who seem to make a habit of harassing Phil Free, the musician downtown, whose song Hospitality Nazis has hit the top 10.
Hospitality Nazis, doing the best they can. Hospitality Nazis, trying to put you in the can.
I like it. Actually, that's a new version, which I haven't heard before. Maybe you can put that on tape and roll it for us there, Nick. So I'm sorry, I interrupted you in the midst of your report.
Well, there's been 38 complaints received by the board. John said there haven't been any really serious, dangerous situations.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
so. He said there's been a large number since July, however. It was pretty dormant March till July, but the publicity must have got out, and now there's a lot coming in.
Either that or the chief is now letting the phone complaints come through as part of the record, or has directed the staff to do that.
Yeah. So people can pick up these complaint forms. Should I list the places? Types of places where they can get them?
Sure, if you'd like, although I encourage people to follow, to also call you and discuss with you, as a member of Stop Police Abuse Now, their options, because however well-intended, and I do believe Gary Yamene is very well-intended and also very accessible, I think it's very important for there to be an independent, and I believe you are an independent source of information, and you've been kind of following these complaints for years. You've acquired somewhat voluminous files on this stuff, right?
Yes, I have. So I know the pattern.
And
yeah.
Your number is what?
475-2012.
475-2012, and that's SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now. And you also want to give out the names and addresses of where you can get these, you know, forms, which you got to be candid, they go to the police department, and the police department does the investigating, and then the citizens on this board, you know, essentially rubber stamp what the police department does, or they review it, let's put it that way, but they usually rubber stamp it. Go ahead.
First of all, the office of this Citizens Review Board is 915 Cedar Street.
Mm-hmm. And they're open from 9 to 1, Monday through Thursday.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you got to be careful to keep them on the right hours. And also, what's the phone number there? Do you have that?
The phone number is 429-3262.
429-3262 for the Citizens Police Review Board.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I think that's all I have right now.
Okay. Well, that's great, Nick. You know, call back at any point if you have more you want to do. And we might also mention that we're avidly awaiting your next dramatic production, which we hope will feature me in a starring role, or possibly someone else, maybe Chris Brosda. No, just kidding about that.
I think my next production deals with the Founding Fathers' interest in hemp production.
Really? So a token away there.
So, okay, I'll run along for now.
All right, thanks, Nick.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. And we have a phone call coming in. Number is 427-3772 if you want to follow this caller. And also, we're hoping to hear from Ed Fry, attorney at law and articulate critic of District Attorney Art Danner.
Hi there. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Yeah, hi. I wanted to get some history on the Police Review Commission.
Okay.
In Santa Cruz, and maybe you had some history on SPAN and the like, and to know how it came to the point where it is now.
Okay.
And what might lie ahead.
Well, you know, it's a very good question, and you're going to actually probably send me back to the books to really fill out
the
history.
Well, I'll kick back and listen. I just wanted to get a basic handle on the history of how, what you know, Robert, about how SPAN evolved, how the Police Review Commission evolved to the point where it's at now, because there must have been an interesting historical struggle to get it even to this point.
That's true. Well, let me give you a kind of a brief synopsis as I know it, and again, it's a limited history.
Okay, well, I'm going to take it off the air.
Sounds good.
Okay, all right. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's Bob LaMonica, who's doing his own activism in the community. I think he's working at the moment to make sure that the Pacific Avenue area becomes friendly territory for bicyclists and pedestrians. I have another caller. I'm going to take this other call briefly, and then I'm going to get back to the question that Bob had about the history of SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, and the Citizens Police Review Board.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Robert, this is Ed.
Ed Fry.
The very one.
Well, interesting. I'm going to ask Bob's indulgence, because have you been listening to the show?
I just tuned in.
Yeah, Bob asked the question about the history of police review. And maybe what I'll do before we begin this interview, you're calling in at my request. We actually had a very good interview, which I taped several days ago, and then I found that it was of questionable quality and couldn't really be aired effectively. So hopefully, since you're not of questionable quality, I wanted your words to go out directly.
The ideas were not questionable.
We'll have to ask our Danner about that one.
Oh, sure.
The district attorney. But before we go into this interview with you, let me give a brief synopsis so that I can kind of whet Bob's interest. Maybe you can give me some comments on this. Is that a possibility? How's your time looking?
Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead.
Well, police review in Santa Cruz, the first I heard of it was in the 70s when a group called COM, I think it's the Coalition Against Legalized Militarism, was interested in doing something around the county abuses. I think they were trying to limit weapons or some such thing. It was a campaign run in the mid-70s or early 70s that failed. They tried, they got something on the ballot and they failed. Similarly, throughout the 80s, of course, there were people who spoke against police abuse, and there was the infamous Code Blue scandal, which Kate Wells described in our last show or two ago, in which police beat up homeless people and then said over the radio, Code Blue, which might come and beat up some homeless people with us, please. Again, there was no police review. Police review probably had some eloquent spokespeople in the person of Carl Foytke, I believe his name was, who was interested in homeless rights in the mid-80s, and Billy Quealy, who was also concerned with the rights of poor people. And the two of those two activists have been operating independently. Carl Foytke. I think they supported alternative candidates for city council. They supported the right for a camping ground in the mid-80s and stopping of police harassment of campers. But when I became involved in 1988. In 1987, Jane Immler ran for sheriff of the county against Al Noren in order to publicize police abuses, and she lost, but she got a pretty big vote considering she essentially put no money into the campaign. Then in 1988, one of the concerns that we had when we had our Coalition for Human Rights for the Poor on the Mall and got, I don't know, 2,000 or 3,000 signatures, along with modifications in the sleeping ban, which makes it illegal for people to sleep after 11 at night in Santa Cruz, was Citizens Police Review Board. We were looking for a police review board, and a lot of people supported that. We didn't get anywhere with it, but throughout 1989, police harassment escalated under the mayorship of Marty Wormhout, who was going after free food at the town clock, which we were distributing, going after sleepers. There was a whole, ongoing homeless, low-level insurrection. There was no place for people to legally sleep at night, as there now is a place for some people to legally sleep at night, the campground. Police Review actually became a cause. The Coalition for Citizens Police Review Board formed in the fall of 1990, sort of out of a group of people who were working on the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep, which was a group interested in a legal campground, headed by Sherry Connable, Paul Brindell, and Margaret Marr. Marr announced the formation of a Citizens Police Review Board around the same time that Nick Whitehead and I and some others formed a group called SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, which essentially was interested in compiling reports of police abuse and showing people different modes of protesting them, specifically in legal channels through complaints to the Attorney General, complaints to the Grand Jury, complaints to the Internal Affairs Departments of the different police jurisdictions, claims against the city, public speeches at city council meetings, other kinds of direct action and legal actions to publicize how police abuse could be curbed through publicity. Around that time, the Coalition for Citizens Police Review Board proposed a model based, actually they took a number of different models. They wanted a much stronger police review board than actually came about. And I'm gonna continue with this, but I'm realizing this is getting longer, and Ed, this isn't your area of expertise. So Bob, that's a kind of a teaser for you, and if you want to stay tuned through the Ed Fry interview, I will continue this discussion of the history of police review to my knowledge after Ed and I have finished batting about some more recent topics.
Yeah, the only thing I would say about the Citizens Police Review that we have in Santa Cruz at the present time is that it doesn't have any teeth.
Mm-hmm.
As they enacted it, it gives the police department all the power and the Citizens Review Board very little to review. And all they can do is, the strongest thing they can do is make a recommendation saying, oh, in effect, oh, please, to the police department, won't you do something, please, about this guy? Well, that has, you know, that's almost worthless, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to an interview on KZSC the other night of John Malkin by Bob DeBolt. John's feeling really badly about it. He's a member of the police review board. He was on the committee to try to get it enacted in the first
Coalition,
place.
Yeah.
Right. And he's really down about it. It's really sad. It's just without any teeth. So there we have it. And the only time it's going to change is when people decide that the Mark Furmans of the world have to go. And, you know, that's the greatest lesson from the O.J. trial, is that we have to come together as a society and say, we're not going to let this continue. Not only are we going to screen people, new people, differently from the way we've screened them for police work and look for really real peace officers instead of bullies, we're going to go through the present roles and eliminate those who are the bullies now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have to do, and that's what I'm going to be calling for as part of the campaign for Congress. Nationwide. I mean, if we want peace, we're going to have peace officers, and we don't have that right now.
That's right. Well, I think that, you know, actually, apropos of this history that we were talking about, in the summer of 1990, after the homeless had rallied on July 4th, we had about 200 or 300 homeless people who came to this rally in San Lorenzo Park and, you know, spoken out on behalf of the rights of homeless people throughout the state and against police abuse against the homeless. Some of us talked about putting together a people's tribunal, which we felt would be a kind of an appropriate response to police problems. We would give the police officers...
I'm going to go off the line and keep talking. I'll be right back.
Sure. We would give the police officers, of course, an opportunity to appear before that tribunal and state their case or have one of their advocates there. But more important, we would give those who were
who had been abused by the police an opportunity to present their case publicly, to inform the community, and to hopefully build pressure for change. Now, that didn't go anywhere because for different reasons. One was that the homeless movement got split in the summer of 1990 by the kind of internal factionalism that happened when moderates tried to exclude radicals under the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep, headed
right.
by Sherry Connable.
I'm back.
Yeah, welcome back, Ed.
Thanks. And that's a classic problem with the left staying together.
Yeah, stay together as a group. Don't blow it.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to avoid this time. I mean, Sherry and I are working together this time on the. With SOS, Save Our Shelter, the group that's trying to keep...
I'll be right back.
Yeah. Boy, he's running all over the place, this guy. There's another group that formed, and another alternative to dealing with police abuse. Citizens Police Review Boards across the country, even the best, like the one in Berkeley, which actually has the power to... which has an independent investigator who can look at police complaints, which has... its own funding, which is, it does its completely separate investigations from the police department and holds public hearings. Even the best review boards are essentially kind of bureaucratic collections of often citizens who are from a more conservative background, not always, but frequently. And
they're like our grand jury. They don't really know how government works. They're only in it long enough to start to learn how it works. They don't have any real courage to get to the basic roots of the problems, even if they did know how it works, and then they're gone.
Yeah, and I also think it's a question of advocacy here. I mean, and this is the other approach to, there's actually two other approaches to dealing with this problem, at least, three other approaches. One of them is, for instance, Copwatch, which is an organization which has been operating in Berkeley since 1989 and publishing a very informative and interesting quarterly newsletter. And what it does is, we had it here in Santa Cruz at different times, a local Copwatch headed by Bob Duran, who's now doing music on the street, and he's a father, and he works with Food Not Bombs. But Copwatch goes out to incidents of police activity and videotapes what's going on and watches the cops. And then it advises people through workshops as to how to effectively assert your rights. In essence, empowering the citizenry and encouraging them to take the responsibility that liberals want to foist on citizen police review boards.
Yep.
So that is a good approach. It does require people willing to run around with video cameras and scanners and a lot of volunteers, and you have to be willing to take a certain amount of flack, but I think it's a very positive thing. The second approach are spontaneous demonstrations of different sorts that can have a significant effect. For instance, in the Butchie Baker matter, Butchie Baker is an officer in the Santa Cruz Police Department who was accused of molesting at least nine women, or let's say sexually mistreating them in terms of searches and touching and so forth. And his case was publicized by me and also by Margaret Marr. We were at odds in terms of factional problems, but we both were concerned about Officer Baker's conduct. And there were some, you know, impromptu demonstrations. And the most obvious demonstration of, which I think, and I don't know how much of an impact it had, but I suspect that it probably did, was the Rodney King riots, if you will, or demonstrations that occurred after the not guilty verdicts were found against Kuhn and the three other police officers who were tried in Simi Valley. And there was a huge march from the University of California. There were almost, I don't know, there were several thousand people flooding down to the county building to at least 1,000. I mean, it was packed.
Right.
And that has massive impact, I think. Maybe it may not last, but they remember that. It's just as the May 11th demonstration, which was much smaller on the sit-down issue in 1994, I think resulted in a real pullback of harassment of people for sitting on the mall for a long period of time.
Right. Anyway, we should probably get to my stuff because I really don't have a lot of time.
Let's get to your stuff, for heaven's sakes. So you're running for Congress. Give me four significant planks in as brief a form as you can. So what do you represent?
Okay, first and foremost is I want to institute a more compassionate government, and go just the opposite direction that it's going right now under Newt Gingrich and his pals, which is... cruelty to children and poor and generally people, anybody who needs any help of any kind,
mm-hmm.
and in favor of giving tax breaks and other favors to the rich. But the only way that we'll ever have any hope of getting such a government, a government based on compassion, is to break the stranglehold that the corporations hold over our government, over our elections, and over our media.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that that's going to be accomplished, as I see it, as a practical matter, strategically, is to have massive demonstrations of people's discomfort with the present regime. In other words, we have to get out and stop the machine in the streets, in the traffic, whatever it takes to get media focus on the problems of that arise out of the corporate control of everything.
What's happening in France, even as we speak, you know?
Uh-huh.
There are millions of people that are out of work now and on strike against a similar austerity program in France. In fact, some commentators have stated it's building up to look like 1968 again, when there was almost a revolution against de Gaulle and the French Republic at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it's very exciting there, and we have to follow the lead and speak with our bodies.
Now, you sound like a populist, you know.
I'm afraid I am.
Fine. Now, populists, you know, made a big showing like in the 1890s, when there was, you know, great anger against the railroads and the corporations, and they actually won seats in legislatures across the country and mounted a presidential campaign, which eventually fell apart because they allied with the Democrats under William Jennings Bryan.
In fact, I think you still have my book about that, don't you?
I'm keeping your book, and you don't get it back until you win the election.
Ooh, how can I win without reading?
I'll return your book.
Actually, I stole it from somebody else.
Oh, well, there you are. Theft. This is some sort of anarchistic solution. Property is theft, I guess.
Right.
Well, let me ask you, again, try to focus on how this would affect poor people in Santa Cruz and issues of police abuse. And then I'm going to try to run you by your recent legal struggles and how that's going. I believe you had something happened at the end of November?
Yeah. Okay, how would it affect people here? Well, people here have to, first of all, affect things themselves for it to affect them. In other words, they have to be willing to join in the 60s style, civil rights style, sit down strikes, really, in order to dramatize and bring the press out. Maybe strikes in front of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, which is owned by the Wall Street Journal, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we want to send a message to Wall Street, there's the quickest way: stand outside the front door of the Sentinel and say, "Look, we know what you're up to." Maybe throw pap at them, throw pablum at their windows.
Or chalk on the sidewalk. That's now illegal, you know.
Chalk. Yeah, that's right. It is, and that would be the first step. And if we don't get any reaction, maybe we'll start throwing pablum and other sorts of stuff back. And but in other words, we've got to. As a group, demonstrate that we have dire circumstances here, and that if they don't get reversed, you know, we're going to slip completely into chaos and darkness here. And so,
well, I think when civil disobedience has been used in the past and gotten a wide following, it often has to focus around issues that are simple and widely understood, such as in India, the oppression of the British, such as up in the Northern California, Maxim's rape of the forests, such
right.
as in the United States, oppression against black people in the South and throughout the country, for that matter.
Yeah.
Now, you're being kind of vague. The corporations...
Well, corporate control of everything. In other words, like the Wall Street Journal owning the Sentinel is...
So what is your demand? What specific changes are you seeking?
That people elect only those candidates who refuse all group money of any kind, especially the corporations' money and the soft money coming out of the parties, but all group money. Because people who are in groups don't get to really control where that money gets spent when it comes to lobbying. It's only the people right at the top who make those decisions and therefore, you know, reinforce the elitism that's already rampant in this.
So the corporation runs a candidate but doesn't give them any money and says, okay, I won't take any money from any group. What is your program for ending corporate control in this country? Are you a socialist? Are you an anarchist?
I'm a socialist in the sense that I would rearrange economic affairs such that people would be rewarded the highest who do the most important work, such as mothering, fathering, nurturing, teaching, caring for children, etc. That those should be the highest rewarded jobs.
What about being a baseball player?
Those should be taxed accordingly. so that somebody who's plays a game for a living gets is not going to make $3 million a year anymore at the expense of everyone else.
Now, but you say tax, so you then have some confidence that a bureaucratic structure can be evolved that will actually not eat up all the tax. Part of the concerns of a right-wing rebellion that we've seen, or revolution, as what's his name, Gush Dumbo calls it, Rush Limbaugh, for those who don't recognize that, is that you know, that who gets taxed? Mostly, it's middle class people, and they say it all goes, of course, into the welfare cheats' pockets.
Right.
You know, all these rich welfare moms are running around just having a great old time.
As far as the tax structure is concerned, what the first and most important fact is that the difference between the 1950s and the 1990s, and that is that in the 50s, corporations paid 30% of the total income tax revenue to the federal government, mm-hmm. and now they pay only 10%. And that, if we want to balance the budget, that's the only way it can really be done. And that is to get the corporations to pay their fair share again.
Well, most of the, you know, this is something that interested me. I mean, often you hear people on the left denouncing the military increases, but in fact, the military, which I think is at $250 billion now, is only, it's a quarter now of what the total deficit is or budget is on this situation. I mean, my own economic understanding of the situation is often less than thorough here, but even Eric Schick, that great liberal from KSCO, or I should say the token liberal on KSCO, has it conceded that, perhaps for that reason we should ignore the point, but it's conceded that it's not mainly military spending which is eating up most of the budget now. It's entitlement programs such as, I don't know, with Social Security and Medi-Cal, or is it Medicaid, sorry?
No, it's programs like giving free licenses to Rupert Murdochs of the world. It's giving free mining claims to the billionaire corporations of the world. $7 an acre,
that
company recently bought some acreage in Arizona that's going to net them about $3 billion
more.
I mean, what kind of a government do we have? What we have is corporate welfare on a huge, huge scale that has to be... That's the real agency that's sucking up our resources.
Getting back to Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
That certainly affects Santa Cruz, but... are you, for example, in favor of boycotting chain stores here in Santa Cruz?
Yes.
And what about the Bookshop Santa Cruz, because they won't let me in?
Bookshop Santa Cruz is not a chain, so I don't know that...
No, I'm actually being somewhat facetious, although I still favor the boycotting of stores who support the downtown ordinances. And Santa Cruz Bookshop, of course, headed by Neil Coonerty, former mayor and city council member who was actually behind those anti-homeless laws, is one of the shops that HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, targeted. But getting back to the point, yeah, the chain stores, well, I always say as I walk by, crown out of town.
Uh-huh.
But I'm also, of course, concerned with local bigotry.
Yeah.
And I think you are, too, because you've been dealing with the Zanatos case, which, incidentally, I issued a new flyer on recently. Mm-hmm. Can you give us an update on the Zanatos situation?
Well, as far as my involvement in litigation against them, that has come to an end because we settled.
Zanatos is a grocery store downtown. What was the circumstance? What was the situation there?
Well, my client was in there. He was homeless, and he had food stamps to purchase some milk with. And 2 days earlier, he had purchased a bottle of milk, a glass bottle, and paid the $1 deposit for the bottle with his food stamps. This particular day, checkout guy informed him, well, we no longer do that. We don't accept food stamps for the deposit on your milk bottle. So you'll have to pay cash. And all my guy had was 50 cents and couldn't. So my client got angry and stormed out of the store and kicked the door on his way out. Didn't harm the door, just kicked it as a, you know, just his message to the store.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of screw you guys. And so the assistant manager, Kerry Colm is his name, followed him out and started screaming at him and hollering at him, and then grabbed him by the shoulder and wheeled him around and struck him in the nose,
mm-hmm.
With his fist. And so my client came to me and said, I want to do something about that, and so we sued him.
What'd you get?
$5,000.
Wow, and this man as an individual, not the store.
No, we sued both the individual and the store. The store for allowing them to develop a hostile environment. environment there against poor people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the, you know, I think this...
Where did the money come from?
Probably from Carrie Combe personally and insurance carrier for the store.
So the store, in fact, did respond to this with a settlement, do you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because they knew it was going to be worse and worse publicity for them, and I think they've learned a lesson as a result, and they will be careful next time they try to pick on somebody like that.
Well, you would think so, but I actually have an interview here, which I'm going to try to find and play at some point, which has a woman saying that she had bought something in Zanata's as a deadhead and walked out of the store and tried to sit down and eat and was harassed endlessly by an employee demanding she leave the table. Because the employee didn't like the company she had kept. Apparently she was with some people who had been grazing inside, as they say, eating, you know, nibbling from the area.
Right.
And so she was then harassed endlessly, she says, for about 15 minutes. She ignored the man, but he continued to demand she leave. And she said, no, I'm not going to leave. I'm going to finish my sandwich. And she did. So I don't know if it's ended or not. But you've probably been receiving other complaints from Zanata's, because I did publicize your interest in hearing about whether there was such a hostile climate to the poor, as you put it. Did you get more, any input on that?
Not much, no. I did get one or two phone calls, but that's about it.
I see. So perhaps they're, well, you know, I've got to be candid with you. I shop at Zanata's. I like their tri-tip, all you vegetarians out there, and I like some of the other things they have. So I'm in and out of that store. I'm not boycotting Zanata's. Perhaps I should be. I don't know. I do distribute literature in there, and some of which criticizes Zanata, so maybe they'll boycott me after a while.
Maybe.
But anyway, let's get back to your case. You yourself have been not only a candidate in district attorney elections of 1990 and 94, with a growing minority of people concerned and voting for you against the, what, five-term DA Art Danner?
Yeah, I got 42% in
'94. That's not bad.
Yeah.
And he probably outspent you considerably, right?
Mm, I don't think so.
Oh, really? You spent more?
I may have.
My goodness. Well, you got to buy me dinner one of these. Actually, I owe you dinner. Actually, I do owe you dinner, and I owe you dinner because most recently you have sued Art Danner as a citizen in a class action suit. Is that the way to put it?
Yes.
In which you demanded that the money expended in 1994 to pay the salary of Catherine Gardner, an employee, an assistant district attorney. Well, why don't you tell the story?
Well, he... Well, she came to him. She was his drug enforcement prosecutor, and she came to him in March of 94 and said, Art, this former boyfriend of mine is trying to extort $7,500 from me. He's threatening to go to you with the story that I'm a cocaine user, whereas, in fact, I've only used cocaine once, and it was only because he forced me to do it and was physically threatening to beat me up if I didn't snort it. So I did. And please protect me from this guy, would you? And Art turns around and fires her. But he didn't really fire her. He sent her home, and he said, oh, now, listen, you just keep quiet. If anybody asks, just tell them you're sick, and you just stay there, and we'll keep paying you your salary and your benefits. And she said, well, gee, okay. And so she went home, and she took all his money for 4 months while the election campaign worked its way through the system. And then in July, after the June election, he said, okay, now you're fired. And that was it. And then she immediately asked for a public hearing before the Civil Service Commission, which, you know, in order to appeal her hearing, her firing.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out during that time that Art Danner had caused the time cards to be falsified. It showed, throughout that whole period, showed regular pay instead of administrative leave or some other kind of, you know, arrangement. He just kept on making everybody think, everybody there in the auditor's office, people that handled the money, they kept on thinking that she was just doing her job every day because it showed regular pay. And so Art was able to keep it quiet even from the rest of the county. He was worried about getting accused of hypocrisy the way I had accused him of hypocrisy in 1990 when I ran against him the first time, where he had, under the influence of gin and tonics, he had injured a woman seriously in an auto accident in 1987. And he hadn't gotten charged with drunk driving because the cops who showed up at the scene of the accident, they recognized him right away and they said, oh, Art, are you okay? And they took him home. They gave him a ride home. And whereas they harassed the woman mercilessly at the hospital where she was taken by ambulance, they wanted her blood test so they could do a complete drug workup on her, try to find something that, that would accuse her of being the cause of the accident, where it was clear that he, Danner, had been drinking and admitted as much later under oath in deposition, and she sued him.
Now, Art, you're Ed.
Thank you.
Yes.
Artful Ed.
Artful Ed, very good. I like that, Artful Ed. You had your belly full of art, so you're moving on. Was there any response, did any supporter of Art Danner ever give a defense of Art Danner's behavior in that circumstance or present a different account of facts around that incident?
No, as I say, he, in fact, Art himself admitted under oath when he was sued and they took his deposition, he admitted under oath that he had been drinking multiple gins and tonics at the Holiday Inn right next to the courthouse where he went after work that day. So, no, there's no question that he was drunk and that he smashed a woman, you know, head on. He pulled right out in front of her as he was pulling out onto Ocean Street out of the courthouse parking lot there. You know, it was a clear case of his fault. He did get a ticket for reckless driving, but they never even popped the question to him, Art, have you been drinking?
Can you hold me just a moment here, Ed?
Yeah.